The Great Recession may be years behind us, but many people are still recovering from its effects, more people in some places. Our final guest today talked to dozens of people in Ohio, a state hard hit by recession. Rana B. Khoury is the author of As Ohio Goes, Life in the Post-Recession Nation. Rana is studying for a PhD in political science at Northwestern University near Chicago. Her previous writing has won awards from Northwestern and Georgetown University. Rana has lived in far-flung places, including Syria and Singapore, but Ohio is home. Rana Khoury, welcome to The Exchange.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here.
So is Ohio slower to come out of the recession than the rest of the country?
It is at a very somewhat close pace, actually. In some ways, we were ahead of the nation. For instance, our unemployment rate was coming down after the recession at a very close pace, if not the same pace, and it actually became sort of a big feature in the 2012 election. People were talking about Ohio's unemployment rate coming down. However, since time has gone by in the past few years, Ohio, you know, it's taken us a long time to sort of start to have job gains and not just job losses. And so things have moved quite slowly.
Ohio can be so important in presidential elections. Was there any time urgency to get your book out this year?
I was doing the research for the book from 2012 and 2013, doing the interviews and writing since then. I actually thought it would come out a little sooner, but I learned a lot about the publishing process and that it doesn't go quite as fast as I initially imagined. So it is good timing in the end, though.
So aside from being a swing state, is Ohio a middle in other ways, a good American cross-section?
Absolutely, I think so. So it's a swing state because we have these electoral college votes that are not predictable, but they're very predictive of who's going to be the winner. However, it's more than that. It's economically, we represent a vast range of sectors in terms of agriculture, industry and manufacturing, medicine, universities. And so we really represent, I think, the broad swath of the American economy and American politics. And the only place where I think we're a little iffy is that we don't really have much of a Hispanic population. It actually, last I checked, only stood around 3-4% of Ohio's population. So that is one place where we do differ.
Talk about what you did here, who you talked to, how you found them, and how you approached the project generally.
Sure. So I approached the project wanting to know more about people's experiences with the Great Recession itself. However, once I got started, I realized that my inquiry really had to be much bigger than that because, as it turned out, the recession was just this particularly dramatic moment in what I could tell was a much longer-term process that had been going on really since the 1970s, and that the recession, although it officially ended in 2009, its effects were really still around when I started the project, and we were really slow to come back out of it, and I'm not sure we ever will be, you know, this vigorous economy again. So I started talking to people about that broader sort of time period and wanting to get people in these different sectors that I indicated from different economic categories. I mean, I have people in the book who are making very little money, but I also have a few people in there who have six-figure incomes, and wanting to understand their economic experiences to help us understand these long-term processes. So I approached people in different ways, really. The first sort of exploratory fieldwork took place in county festivals and fairs, just getting a sense of where people were at, what were they were feeling, and then eventually sort of getting out to different parts of the state, usually what we would call snowball sampling, starting off with one person who I got to know and them referring me to other people to speak to.
Is that a fairly prevalent feeling, Rana, the idea that Ohio's economic best days might be behind it?
You know, I don't think it's just about Ohio. When I talk about this, I'm really thinking about the nation at large. So, yes, in Ohio, we did have, for instance, a lot of manufacturing. And there's no way around the fact that that's declined, and it probably we won't see as many people as we once had employed in manufacturing again. I think that's safe to say. But I think this is also, you know, longer-term processes that encompass the nation. So when we talk about things like income inequality, the declining standards of living, wage stagnation, the same stuff that's going on in Ohio is really going around the country as well.
So in your analysis, is it globalization or tax policy, something else, or a bunch of things all working together?
Well, it's certainly a bunch of things, and we can look at it at a few different levels. So if you want to start at sort of the biggest level, yes, globalization is something that we've had these major economic transformations that are undeniable. Free trade and open markets has certainly made our ability to compete in an area like steel production very difficult. But at the same time, one thing I want to emphasize, and something I try to emphasize throughout the book, is that we have to look at policy first and foremost. So when we start looking at policy and how it has played out during this same period that globalization has been playing out since the 1970s, we see that our policy has not accommodated to the changes that might have helped us to help soften the blow. And in fact, policy has often either just been neglected or been countering, sort of doing the opposite of what might help. So if we look at tax policy, we see that tax policy was much more progressive up to the 1970s and has become less progressive ever since during this same period of globalization. If we look at financial regulation, we see that, again, the finance sector has been deregulated over the same period. If we look at campaign finance, more money is going into politics than ever before, and there's really, especially after the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, that's something that is probably not going to end and just get worse. Another thing is if you look at the representation of interests in Washington over the same period, corporations have increased their representation in Washington at a really outstanding pace, while union representation and labor representation has either declined or remained stagnant. So looking at all those sort of policy areas, we see that in the midst of this major economic transformations associated with globalization, our policy has been doing anything but keeping up and, in fact, making things harder.
Rana Curry talked to dozens of people across Ohio for her book, As Ohio Goes, Life in the Post-Recession Nation. You can join this conversation on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The first chat that you provide here is with an Amish man. What were the circumstances for him?
Oh, so that was, I was very excited to get that interview. It's not so easy to get to know Amish people, although we have a great deal of them. In Ohio, you can get to know them sort of outwardly, but to get into the home was one of my small achievements, I counted. And he, you know, at first, you see in the story that he was kind of dismissive that they were impacted by the recession, and that's with some very logical reasons, is that they're not so dependent on the many parts of the economy that the rest of us are. So Amish, they have their own schools, they manage their own sort of healthcare systems, they don't depend on electricity. So all these ways they're sort of cut off from the larger economy, although, of course, they are also our builders. They're also in agriculture. They're also in lumber. So they're definitely a part of it. But as we sort of got to the point, I saw that, in fact, he was deeply affected, and I think others were deeply affected, especially because some of the areas where they are most active, which is in building, were particularly impacted both in terms of housing and businesses weren't needing to be built, and so they weren't able to contribute in that way. And I even found that some of them had invested in a lot of real estate themselves and therefore were also hit by the housing bubble. So really it's like nobody was safe from this massive rupture that the nation experienced in 2007.
I'm most curious about the people you referred to as involuntarily retired. Tell us about some of those conversations.
Yes, this was something that struck me, I think, the hardest, because when we think about recessions and economic hard times, we often think about, you know, the youth and what's going to be the future of our children. But really, I found so much that it's people who are sort of middle age or upper middle age who tend to get hit very hard. They are often will be the first one to take cuts or layoffs. Their pensions are going to be affected. And when that happens, when somebody who's older is laid off, even if it's in their 50s, the retirement that they had planned was 10, 15 years away. And they are not going to have an easy time getting back into the market at all. They are no longer the sort of desirable young workers. They are not, they were used to higher incomes that companies aren't offering anymore. If you look at, for instance, auto workers, the incomes of people who are middle age and above were much higher because of the sort of union victories in that realm. And now people are being taken in on hourly work. They don't have the pension plans that were once the case. So even if they make it back into the market, it's not going to be as good to them. But often they don't make it back into the market, and they're really going to, instead of having a retirement that was secure, they're going to have a much longer period of time that is much less secure than before.
And it's not just individuals. I mean, I think about cities like Youngstown, which was so big in the steel industry, but very different now that that industry has largely moved offshore. These are places that are not going to be like they were.
That's right. And Youngstown, you know, unlike many other cities in Cleveland, or cities in Ohio like Cleveland, Youngstown was really dependent on this one industry, on steel. And since deindustrialization began to hit Youngstown, it really has not been able to come back from that in a strong way. And, you know, it started in the 60s that steel plants were starting to close. Even in Ohio, I mean, we didn't have to wait for the recession to make things hard. From the year 2000, our jobs were either stagnant or in decline. So a place like Youngstown, the impact is not just on the individuals, you know, and this applies to many cities everywhere, where it gets into this cycle when individuals don't have jobs or good jobs that pay taxes, then city services are no longer in the same quality and quantity that they once were. We see increases in crime. We see the decline in real estate value. And that just feeds into itself. And it's this cycle that's very hard to break. And it's very unfortunate to watch.
Now, reading your accounts of people who lost jobs, got new skills, got jobs, lost them too, you say the economy has never really been generous to the masses. I mean, were we fooled, Rena, by the stable, prosperous CEOs of the mid-20th century America?
I don't think we were fooled. I think that it's quite possible to have people being paid well and for the economy to be doing well, too. If we look at places in Europe, for instance, we see these economies that are at a similar industrial sort of stage as we are. And nevertheless, their workers are well positioned. They're making higher incomes. We don't have as severe income inequality. You know, America, it tops the list for income inequality among post-industrial nations. So these aren't inevitable processes. We can have both. And in fact, it contributes to the economy to have less income inequality. When you have a stronger middle class that's able to sort of purchase, that's able to invest in their children's educations, that's all going to feed into an even stronger economy. So paying workers and having a strong economy aren't objectives that are all at odds with each other.
So do we accomplish this through tax policy, through wage policy, a combination thereof?
It's certainly a combination, and I think a lot of it, if we go back to sort of how much our labor's interests represented in Washington, that's quite limited, and it's not a fair game out there in Washington. So when obstacles are being put up to labor organization and representation, it's going to be very hard to see outcomes that benefit workers at large.
All right, some really fascinating stories in the book. It's called As Ohio Goes, Life in the Post-Recession Nation. Rena Corey wrote it and joined us today in the Exchange. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, take care.